I'm Jeremy Barron, and this is Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Europa League winners, Atletico Madrid, and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat is Barca Blaugrana's writer, Renato Gonçalves. Renato Gonçalves is the guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat, which means only one thing. It's Baronato episode. Baronato back in the building with much to discuss, including the World Cup. Brazil eliminated by Belgium. Belgium eliminated by France. France likely knocking out Croatia to win the World Cup on Sunday, although I don't want to talk too much about that. Luka Modric might get on my case in the post-game comments. Nonetheless, I talked to Renato about Brazil's surprising exit in the World Cup quarterfinals. What went right, but mostly what went wrong. We also, of course, have to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo leaving Real Madrid. The sun peeking out once more from behind the clouds after 9 long, dark, desolate years. The summer transfer windows for both Atletico and Barcelona. Plus, what's in Renato's playlist this month? Gotta keep listening to find out. A precaution before we continue. My conversations with Renato are wide-ranging and improvisational in nature. They do not necessarily focus on Atletico Madrid and Atletico Madrid only. For podcasts more in that vein, I will refer you to my conversations with Rob Walker, Into the Calderon staff writer, who appears on this program every week. But know that if you proceed from this point, you will enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it. In addition, head over to patreon.com/ColtGennaroChat to become a Colt Gennaro Chat amigo. From as little as $3 a month, you too can access the bonus pod. We dropped one on Monday, a deep dive into Atletico's financial situation. You don't want to miss it. Patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat. We'll be back with Renato Gonçalves after this. Start with a question from @RenatoDSG. Maybe you know him.
Yeah,
I do. Can we please not talk Griezmann?
Yeah.
I'm going to say no. I think we do have to talk Griezmann.
Why? How relevant is this topic?
Very.
I don't think it is.
Very relevant.
It's been almost a month now, so I don't think it's important at all.
You would say that.
I'm not wrong. It's been a month, so the news these days moves very fast. Things that happened a month ago don't matter anymore. No, it's your podcast. I'll talk about whatever you want, but. I'll make it clear that this is not a topic I think should be discussed.
your objection is noted.
Yes.
But I actually watched his documentary.
Oh.
Yeah, I watched it. It was about what you think it was. I'll leave it at that. And we're pretty happy with the outcome, especially since he didn't go to you guys. And if he wins the World Cup on Sunday, he probably becomes La Liga's second most marketable asset, since a certain Portuguese striker has left the league, which we'll talk about.
Do we have to talk about that too?
I think so. Impacts both of our teams.
It's 2 days ago. Things move fast.
Not that fast.
Okay.
So, Renato, are you crushed? Are you devastated that Antoine Griezmann will not be playing for Barcelona next year?
I mean, I was sad and all, but I don't think I was devastated. I think it would have been fantastic if he came. I'm not going to say, oh, if he doesn't want to play for us, then who cares? No, I'm not that kind of guy. Yeah, I'm sad. I wish he was with us. I thought, once Gerard Piqué got involved in the damn documentary, I thought, okay, that's it. But obviously not. So that's the second time Gerard Piqué tries to convince us that a player is going to be at Barca and is not. So I guess I don't trust Gerard Piqué anymore. But anyway, I think there are things we can do, players we can sign, that will make the Griezmann's non-departure and non-arrival be less bad. I don't know even what to say, because I was so certain for about a year. And I am sad, but definitely not devastated, because I think we still are a pretty good team, and I really like what we're doing in the transfer window right now. Sometimes it's okay to not have the marquee signing. Let's see what happens. There's still a month to go in the English window, and if we get Eriksen from Spurs, I'll be pretty happy.
How confident are you with that?
I mean, I won't even say how confident I am of anything else, because I was 200% certain of Griezmann, so I won't ever talk about how confident I am in a signing.
Mm.
Because I thought Griezmann come to Barca was like the sun coming in the morning. Like, it's just a thing that happens, and it didn't. So, whatever.
As much as I would like to make fun of you and other Barca fans for being that certain, I was that certain too. Literally until like the 2 or 3 days before the documentary aired, I was still like, yeah, he's probably leaving.
But the last podcast we did, you were talking about getting Dembele back or something.
Yes, it was. Good times.
Like, it was a certainty, and then it wasn't anymore. It was strange.
It was a really... The whole saga itself was just super strange, how it was a solid year of Barca courting him, very actively courting him, much to Atletico's detriment. Atletico had the last word. There wasn't a transfer ban to make his decision easier this time. Atletico had the last word, and they put on a full-court press to keep him, and that's what happened. They're obviously paying him like a king now, but that's what you have to do to keep a player like him. Then that's what you have to do. I mean, just watch, look at him at the World Cup this year. You see just how great a player he is. He's helped get France to the final.
I don't necessarily think he's had a great World Cup, but he's been good. You know, when I thought he was staying, when I saw that Aleti signed Thomas Lemar, I was like, I don't like that.
Yeah, a lot of people thought Lemar was going to be the Griezmann replacement when they're really totally different players.
I thought it was like the last resort Aleti went to convince him to stay, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that they're good friends. I know that for a fact. So I was like, oh, man, this could turn here, because Lemar is really good friends with him, and Lemar is clearly a player that Aleti need to be like the perfect team, of course, for their standards. Because since Carrasco left, even though Carrasco wasn't that great, but he was still a really good left midfielder for them. And they haven't... Simeone tried to put Koke in that position.
Yeah.
And Koke was good, because Koke is good at goalkeeper if you play him there. But he's not that kind of... He's not... It doesn't play well in that position as well as he should. As well as he can, if he plays in central midfield. So when you had a guy like Lemar in a position that Atleti needed, I think it's much more attractive than going to Barcelona to rotate with Suarez and Messi and be on the bench for some games. So that's what I thought when Atleti announced Lemar. I was like, that might change things here. So
yeah, man, and it did. I really like what Atletico have done this window. Obviously, a few things still to do. Getting in Yelson Martin is at the top of the list right now. Announcing Oblak's renewal is also at the top of that list. But getting close to breaking even after spending nearly 90 million plus on Lemar and Rodri and possibly other players. Their transfer window spending is going to top 100 million this year. It's probably going to hit 120 million right around there. So they have to make sales still. It's going to be curious. I'm going to be curious to see who they sell other than Gamero. Verselko, after the World Cup he's had, Verselko is probably going to go, I think.
Really?
I think Atleti sensed an opportunity that, hey, we can make 40 million off this guy. Bye.
Oh, I thought they were going to... But who they signed in his place?
Sidibe from Monaco. That's the guy who has been most consistently linked.
Oh, is that a thing?
Yeah, that's been a thing for a few weeks. I think Versacco has to go before that happens, but Gibril Sidibe has been the guy.
I saw a strong Sidibe to some team in Italy rumor. I think it was Inter or something, because yeah. Inter lost Juan Cancelo, obviously. So I saw a Sidibe to Inter link these days, but I hadn't seen Atleti. That's a really interesting signing if they make.
It would be interesting. Yeah, he's not all that polished, but he's quality.
He fell off a cliff last season. He was amazing when they won the title. I was like, him and Mendy are surely going. And then Monaco and Mendy obviously went, got injured and everything, but I think he's going to have a really good season next season for Manchester City. But Sidibe, I was like, whoa, Monaco kept Sidibe, that's great. And then he fell off a cliff. He's not the same player.
It was kind of the same thing that happened to Lamar last year. Lamar did not have a very good season in 17-18.
But I still think he has immense potential. I don't see Sidibe with immense potential. I think it was kind of, he had the best season of his career, and then he went back to being a normal player. You know what I mean? I think Lamar has never been a normal player. He just had a bad season.
Yeah, someone who I talked to a few weeks back said if Atletico sell Versalco to sign Sidibe, it'd be a huge mistake.
That's a downgrade to me. Because Versalco was good last season when I saw him play for Atleti, and he was obviously having a spectacular World Cup.
He was great against England, like playing on half a leg.
He's the best right back in the World Cup.
Yeah.
To me.
That's probably been the case since the quarterfinals.
I'm doing kind of a World Cup 11, and I was deciding it was him or Kieran Trippier for the right back. And obviously he beat Trippier, so it's got to be him.
Yeah.
He's going to the final. And he was amazing again yesterday.
Oh, just incredible. His assist on Perisic's goal is just unbelievable.
And I thought of you instantly, because when I saw that he was in the starting lineup, because I covered that game for Barça Blaugrana, so I saw him in the starting lineup, and I was like, what the hell? He was injured 3 yeah. days ago.
Yeah.
But I remembered, oh, he's an Atletico Madrid player. Jeremy has taught me many times that Atletico players get recover really fast from injuries.
Yes. Yeah, we have discussed this before, yes.
So I thought of you instantly. I'm like, of course, an Atletico Madrid player got injured and is back 3 days later and played 120 minutes of football at top speed all the time, going up and down the pitch. Of course he did. He's an Atleti player. Because I saw he was out. Like, in every preview, he was out. He wasn't even on the bench. And I think Simeone read one of the papers, called him, and I was like, whoa, what are you talking about? You're not out. You're going to play. But you're not my coach. I don't care. You're going to play. That did. And then he called Simeone called the Croatia coach, and he was like, I don't care what your medical team is saying. You're playing Versalico. If you don't, I'll take your play. I'll kill you, and I'll coach the game tomorrow, and I'll put him in the starting lineup. That's what happened. The only player in Atleti history who didn't come back from injury was Diego Costa. And that's who they tried, the horse placenta. Updated the treatment protocol after that.
It was 4 years ago. So there have been advances in medicine since that time.
And you mean Atletico medicine, not medicine in general, just Atletico medicine.
Yes.
Because they have their own medicine. Western medicine is not for them.
What else we got here? We have a lot. I'm trying to figure out where we should go next. Do you want to talk about Brazil? Are you recovering still?
Yeah, I thought we it wasn't a great tournament, but it wasn't bad either.
Did you expect to win the World Cup this year?
The expectation, general expectation, was this, but I thought France was just too good from the start of the tournament. Like, they were the only good team of all the favorites that looked good in the friendlies before the World Cup. Like, Germany, you could see there was something weird there.
Yeah.
Because they, They struggled against Saudi Arabia, for God's sake.
In retrospect, yes, Germany, we should have seen that coming.
Yeah. What is the other? Spain didn't play well at all in their last friendlies before the World Cup.
Last two friendlies they were not good in.
They didn't show any positive signs at all. And France were the only team blowing everybody away in the friendlies before the World Cup. So I always thought they were the favorites. But I thought it was going to be either a Brazil-France semifinal or a Brazil-France final, depending on, how the seedings would go. But I don't think we're good enough to win it, especially because the players that were really good like 6 months ago arrived at the World Cup in bad form. Like Neymar was injured. Paulinho, who is Paulinho, and couldn't be like mediocre in the World Cup. He was just bad. William fell off a cliff in his last 3 months at Chelsea.
Gabriel Jesus was really bad too.
Oh yeah, he was terrible. It should have been Firmino from the second game on. It should have seen the signs there in the first game. And that's a problem with Chichi too. He's too stubborn. He wants to keep, not really stubborn. Stubborn is the wrong word. He's too loyal to the players that got him to the World Cup and that cost him. Like Casemiro and Coutinho were the only two guys that arrived at the World Cup better than they were 6 months ago. And they were the two best players in the tournament for Brazil along with Thiago Silva. So I thought we arrived at the tournament with a lot of players in a poor moment, poor form. And the coach didn't make any adjustments throughout the tournament despite all the problems that were evident. Especially at midfield, Paulinho couldn't play. It should have been, they played a 4-3-3. It should have been a 4-2-3-1 formation with Paulinho, with Casemiro and Fernandinho together throughout the tournament, not replacing each other when the other was suspended or injured or something, like, which is what happened in the World Cup. And Fernandinho was Kevin De Bruyne had Fernandinho for lunch.
But because, yeah, he did.
But because Fernandinho plays for Brazil completely differently than he does for Manchester City. Manchester City press high, Brazil defend deep. So it's a completely different role that Fernandinho doesn't really play for Manchester City. And Casemiro does for Real Madrid all the time. So it's easier for Casemiro to make that transition. But if you put the two of them together, maybe Casemiro isn't even suspended against Belgium because he doesn't have to do everything alone. So I think Chichi was too stubborn. Too loyal to bad players or players in poor form, and that cost him. And credit to Roberto Martinez too, man. I mean, he left Everton in a really bad light. It didn't seem like he was a good manager, and his game plan against Brazil was masterful. And his first half, to me, the first half Belgium had against Brazil was the best 45 minutes of any team in the tournament so far.
Just ran them over. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
They blew them away. Lukaku on the right wing was genius. Kevin De Bruyne had Fernandinho for lunch, like I said. Hazard killed Fagner, poor Fagner. So it's crazy. It's just crazy how well Belgium played. But Brazil had some underlying problems that weren't addressed. And ultimately, we paid for it. But I wasn't expecting too much better than what we saw anyway. So it's disappointing, but it was not a tragedy for me because I wasn't expecting anything that better than what we saw.
Yeah, it was a weird tournament for them. I had them as the winners entering the tournament. I just thought they had been so good in qualifying, and they had so much talent, and they were in a different mental place than they were in even 2-3 years ago. But they never really convinced from the jump, starting with that draw against Switzerland. You know, they had a few nice wins in a row after that. Well, the Costa Rica game, they had to really, really just knock down the door at the very end there. But, you know, they played well against Serbia. They kind of coasted to that win over Mexico in the end, and I thought they were getting on a roll, and then Belgium just blew them away. Just absolutely rolled them over. It was very impressive for Belgium.
Because that was the problem. There was nothing dramatic to show that changes had to be made. It was really, the problems were kind of, seemed small, but it was clear that when, if those problems continue and weren't addressed, when you get a better team, like Belgium, Brazil would be exposed, and that's what happened. You know, there were small things you can notice, like Paulinho not playing well, Gabriel Jesus not playing well, Willian not playing well, playing Fagner at right back when you have Marquinhos on the bench, who offers so much more defensive stability.
Yeah.
Taking four players to the World Cup who are injured and never using them, or using them once or twice, like Douglas Costa, for instance, who was amazing in the two games he played, but he only played two games because he has an injury history, and that wasn't taken into account. And not playing Casemiro and Fernandinho together, which was something a lot of smart people in Brazil were calling from the start of the tournament. But he wanted to keep Paulinho, and Paulinho is just not a great player, and that was clear. So, yeah, it was small things that when those small things came up against a good team, they would become big things, you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And it all became clear in that first half. And it took Chichi 45 minutes to figure out what the hell Martinez was doing, and then it was too late.
And the big star has gotten all the big criticism, though, it seems. Neymar has gotten a lot of this criticism, even though it wasn't all necessarily his fault. He didn't have a very good tournament, particularly, I didn't think, but he is getting a lot of the flack for this.
Yeah, I can't have an unbiased opinion on Neymar because I don't generally care about the guy for the last year, so I really don't mind if he does well or does badly, to be honest. So I was much more excited for Coutinho and Paulinho to have a good tournament than Neymar. And that was the case. Coutinho was the best player in the tournament.
Yeah, Coutinho was great. He's Brazil's best player.
And Neymar rolled his way to the quarterfinal, so that's what you get. But that's the problem. Neymar is so damn good that even when he plays badly, he ends the tournament with 2 goals and 4 assists in 5 games. And he was the player with the most shots and most chances created for Brazil in the tournament. And he's a special player, but unfortunately, he can't just be a special player. He has to do a lot of other things that don't help. And it hurts the team, hurts himself, and it hurts his reputation. And And it was a lot of things, by the way, that as a Barcelona fan, I ignored. Like, he did a lot of the same thing at Barca, but Barca fans ignored it because it was our player.
Exactly. It's just natural to do that.
Barca fans hated Luis Suarez when he was at Liverpool. He does the same things, except, you know, racism and biting people, but the rest is pretty much the same. And we all love him. I love him, Luis Suarez. I hated him when he was at Liverpool. But that's the thing. When a guy's on your team, you love him.
Yep. That's just part of fandom.
Yeah. But you could see Neymar has always been the same player. But to Barca's credit, when he was around guys of the size of Piqué and Messi in the locker room, especially, you could see a little more well behaved Neymar. But you could still see signs there. But we ignored it because we loved him as a Barca player. Now that he's gone, we kind of don't really care about it. And sometimes the evil ones celebrate when he doesn't do well. And I'm one of those evil ones because I can't be unbiased about Neymar now. I always look at him as the guy who had an entire country pay his release clause and still demanded a 40 million euro bonus for something he didn't do. So how can you expect me to want him to do well? It's impossible. Really impossible.
That's a great take. I agree with it. I understand it. Very briefly, before we finish up and move on to Cristiano Ronaldo, what did you think of France against Belgium, and do you think they're going to win the final? I think France are going to win it. I just don't think Croatia have anything left.
I have a hot take.
You, a hot take? Never.
France have had a bad tournament, but it doesn't matter because they have great players.
Yeah, it's been very... the word is pragmatic, Renato.
No, they played bad football.
Just pragmatic football.
They played bad football in all six games so far. But they have Pogba, they have Mbappe, they have Griezmann. I won't mention Giroud because he's been hot garbage. They have N'Golo Kante. They have Pavard, who's having an absurd tournament.
Lucas as well. Lucas has been an amazing
Is amazing. Varane and Umtiti, best defensive pairing in the tournament, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Lloris made two saves. One against Uruguay, one against Belgium. That would be saving the tournament easily.
And, the save against Uruguay was amazing, astounding.
Yeah, and the save he made against former Atletico player Alderweireld, which I had forgotten about.
Yes.
Until I was reminded by that by a friend, I was like, yeah, he played for Atleti, that's true. He played right back, which is strange. What I'm saying is, if it didn't make the save against Uruguay, he'll still have the save against Belgium as save of the tournament, and vice versa. Hugo Lloris has been stunning in the tournament, but France have played bad. They've been bad all six games, but they have so many good players and such a good defense.
It just doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter how Deschamps sets them up. It doesn't matter if he plays Matuidi as a left winger. They just have so much talent.
Yeah, I mean, I just imagine. I mean, you don't even need to talk Pep. I will talk Pep. Put those players in Pep's hands for an entire month of a tournament. Good Lord Almighty.
Mm.
Good Lord Almighty. Which shows you that if you have too many good players in short tournaments like this, you don't really need to have good coaches. You just need good man management. And that's Deschamps' biggest quality. He's a great man manager. The players respect him and listen to him. And even if his tactical knowledge isn't great, or the application of it, doesn't matter. He has the players in his hands, and the players are too damn good to lose.
Yeah, in a tournament of this length, this relatively short length, you have the most talent, you're probably going to win. And France had as much talent as anyone entering the tournament. They're the heavy favorites on Sunday, I think, deservedly so.
And they're going to beat Croatia. I think this is going to be their best performance of the tournament because it seems like there's one coming where they just blow someone away. And I think it's going to be against Croatia because at some point, 360 minutes of knockout football is going to catch up to you. There's no way they're not. There's no, just no way Croatia is going to have the same energy for the final as they after 120 minutes in all three of the knockout phases. There's just no way.
It has to be just really, really tough for them. I mean, I didn't think they would win yesterday.
And it's not really the physical part because of technology these days. Recovery is really good. But it's just mental. The how mentally draining it must be to play 360 minutes of knockout football. It's insane. So I think that's going to catch up with them in the final, and I think France will blow them away.
And I can't really see France losing a Euros and a World Cup final in back-to-back tournaments. I just can't really see that happening. I think this is their time.
I'm telling you, I see a hat-trick in the final.
Ooh, from who?
Either Griezmann or Mbappe. I see a hat-trick from one of those two. It just seems like a game for them. Because the Croatia defense is tired and is slow as hell.
Yeah, they don't have a very good defense. They've really been riding that midfield. And
they did lose to England because Raheem Sterling couldn't take any of the chances where he ran free behind the Croatian defense. He can turn that it turned like at least six or seven opportunities into a real chance. If you send Kylian Mbappe or Antoine Griezmann behind the Croatian defense, it's going to be a different story. So I don't know, man. I just think France are too good, and I think they have a great game in them. Those players are too good to play seven bad games in a row.
I would agree. Although I would argue it's been pragmatic rather than bad.
Stop! Stop. It's not because you have Griezmann. I have three players in the... I have two players in the French squad, too. I'm rooting for them, but I don't have to be unbiased. They've been bad.
Oh, yeah, the game against Denmark was just awful. The game against Peru wasn't very good, either. They conceded three goals to Argentina.
That Argentina. They conceded three goals. I don't know, man.
They scored four, though.
Yeah, because of great players they have, not because they played well. But I was thinking about this. You know that I'm a big wrestling fan. It's going to be kind of a triple threat match between Barca, Real Madrid, and Atletico.
Yeah.
Because all three teams have three players in the final, if I'm not mistaken.
Atletico have four. I mean, Lamar's signing hasn't been confirmed yet, but he's...
No. Doesn't count.
So Lamar doesn't count.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, so it's three. Griezmann, Lucas, and Verzelko.
Yes. Barca have Umtiti, Dembele, and Rakitic.
Yep.
Madrid, if I'm not mistaken, they have Varane, Kovacic, and Modric. That's right.
So three apiece.
But you know who's going to... But only one team is going to be 100% happy, and that's Atletico. Because their superstar is in the final.
Yep.
Barca and Madrid and Real Madrid already lost their superstars. And for Real Madrid, literally.
Yeah, it's a double whammy.
Yeah.
Let's turn to that. About a year ago, I had you on this program to talk about Neymar leaving La Liga. And now you are back to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo leaving La Liga.
So next year I'm going to be here talking about Messi?
Yes, that's what that means.
Yeah, true.
That will happen.
Yeah, that'll happen.
This was the thing that happened, though, and I didn't believe the reports because we'd seen it before. Not that I didn't believe the reports, but I was skeptical because we have been in this cycle before with Cristiano, where he flirted with leaving before he got a new contract. He once literally said in the third person, Ronaldo is sad, and he got a new contract. Like, he's done this before, right? So I didn't really quite believe what was happening, but then I woke up one morning and it happened. Like, he's gone. And, like, you feel like the sun peeking out between the clouds now that Cristiano Ronaldo has left Real Madrid and left La Liga.
I don't think it's a problem for La Liga, to be honest, because Real Madrid haven't been a factor in La Liga for a decade now.
Ayo.
They've literally won one title in the last decade. Because it's been Barca. It's basically been Barca's league. And Atleti and Real each had one title. But Atleti have been much more of a factor than Real in the last two or three years. The thing about Real Madrid is it's Champions League. And there was a feeling that as long as Cristiano Ronaldo was there, they weren't going to lose the Champions League ever again. And I made this point a couple of times already to a couple of friends of mine. The thing about Ronaldo leaving, and it's why it's going to be, to me, impossible to replace him in the short term, is when it was a Champions League game, and you saw Cristiano Ronaldo across from you as an opponent, you were scared. You were frightened. You were terrified. Because you know he's going to score on you, and you're going to lose to him. Because it's a Champions League game, and that's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it doesn't play well, there's an aura about him.
Exactly.
In a Champions League game. And Messi has the same, even though Messi, to be as honest as I can be, Messi hasn't been good in Champions League for a while now. Even the last time we won, our best player in the Champions League was Neymar in 2015. It's been a really long time since Messi has been a factor in a deep Champions League run for us. That's another story. No other player in world football, no other, has the same aura about him in a Champions League game that Ronaldo does. And I'm saying, in the short term, it's important to say that, in the short term, there's nobody that Real Madrid can sign that an opponent will look at in a Champions League knockout game and be frightened, terrified of. There's just no one they can sign. And that's why I think the Champions League is wide open next season.
I mean, right, I'm sorry, and I think Luka Modric is a great player, but I'm not going to look across the pitch and see Luka Modric and say, oh, no, it's Luka Modric, we're doomed. Like, no,
yeah,
there's only one player who has that aura, it's Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, yeah, even when Madrid didn't play well in the Champions League, which was a bunch of times, particularly last season, they would still find a way, usually because of Cristiano's goals or some offside decision or what have you. That's why I think this is just devastating for them. And I don't think the psychological angle is being played up enough. They lost Zidane and Cristiano in one window, you know, less than 2 months apart. That's devastating. And they can spend all the money they want. They can go spend $300 million on Neymar if they want. Doesn't matter. What they have lost this summer will take at least a year for them to get back. At least.
You know who comes close? I'm not saying that close, but a little close to Ronaldo in their other thing. And they already have that guy, Gareth Bale.
Yeah, and they still might sell him.
Gareth Bale has been the best Real Madrid player in every Champions League final. Every Champions League final since he got there, apart from 2015 against Juventus. Was it 2015?
When they didn't make the final, yeah.
No, 2017, sorry. They beat Juventus. Yeah, 2015 was Barca who beat Juventus. Yeah. 2017, Ronaldo scored twice, and he was the best player on the pitch. But the other four finals that Real Madrid won, the other three, sorry, they won 4 and 5 years. The other three finals they won, Gareth Bale was the best player on the pitch.
Yeah, the two against Atletico in 14 and 16. Bale scored the winner in the first one, and Ramos got the goal in 2016, but it was actually Bale's goal. Ramos never touched the ball, but it still was awarded to Ramos.
Yeah, but even the game, like, it was a bad game in 2016.
Even throughout the game, Bale was very good.
Bale was still the best player on the pitch, even though it was a bad game. So, like, it seems like every time it's a big Champions League game, Gareth Bale comes through, but you can't trust him because of the injury thing. But if it's a Champions League game and Gareth Bale is fit, I think he can be that guy that you're scared of. Because every time he comes onto the pitch in the Champions League game, he's really, really good. So maybe they have that in Bale, but I don't know.
But depends on the key Bale.
But it's not close to Ronaldo in terms of aura. He's more of the... How do I put this? He's more of a quiet influence in Champions League games for Real Madrid. Ronaldo doesn't need to play well to be a factor, and that's really, really difficult to be. Even Messi, that's especially for Messi. Messi doesn't need to touch the ball to influence a goal.
Yeah.
His mere presence around the play has three or four players focused on him. Something else is happening really important around those players, and they don't notice it because they're focusing on Messi. That's the same thing for Ronaldo. That's really difficult to replace. There's no one in world football they can sign because they're not signing Messi, obviously. So, for the short term, because I think Mbappe or Neymar in 2 or 3 years, if they develop the way, especially Mbappe, the way we think they can develop, they can develop their aura. Especially if Mbappe goes to Real Madrid as a World Cup winner, maybe the best player in the World Cup. It may be a Ballon d'Or winner, who knows.
Mm.
But if Mbappe gets to Madrid as a World Cup winner, he can start to create that and can come quicker than we think. But next season, at least, it's wide open. Because there's nobody Real Madrid can sign to replace Ronaldo's impact. In theory and in practice.
Right. They don't have a number 9 right now. Like, we aren't talking about this enough. They don't have a number 9. Borja Mayoral.
Number 9 is Borja Mayoral.
Yeah, Borja Mayoral is their number 9. And I don't really rate Borja.
There's Benzema, but he doesn't count anymore.
No, and they might sell Benzema. I mean, the entire BBC could go this summer.
Yeah, I would keep Bale, to be very honest.
I would too, because I think when Bale's fit, he's world class. Bale's phenomenal. But,
and I'll ask Atletico how to treat players. And I'll put Bale... whenever Bale got injured, I would send him to Atletico and then get him back.
Yeah, you won't miss any games, that's for sure. Oh, you snapped your hamstring in half? No problem. He'll be back next week.
It's Atletico. That's what we do. But honestly, out of BBC, I'll keep Bale.
Yeah, I would too. He's the one guy out of that three I would keep now that Cristiano's gone. But it was an amazing moment. It's a huge shift. The Madrid derby, the Clásico, certainly aren't going to be the same without him and all the goals he's scored against both our teams.
And you know what? It's going to be easier for us to enjoy him now. Because yeah. There will be no emotional attachment. I don't really care about Juventus or the Serie A. So I'll really watch him as a neutral. And maybe if he's as great as he was for Madrid, it'll be easier for me to appreciate without thinking of El Clásico.
Yeah, or
he's playing for another team.
Or the derby in my case. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So maybe I'll become... I don't think I'll ever be a fan of Ronaldo because there are things on a personal level that really rub me off the wrong way with him. But I think I'll be able to appreciate him more than I ever did when he was a Real Madrid player. It was just impossible because he wasn't a great guy and he was associated with the most evil enterprise in the new universe. So now he's associated with the most evil enterprise in Italy. So it's okay.
Right, as long as it's not Spain.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, he made a really good decision. Because all the rumors were, if he left, he was going to be to return to Manchester United. There would be no motivation for him there. He's already adored. He'll try to gain more fans and be adored in another country, another huge club, historic club. I like that about him, that insane ambition and competitiveness that he has to go and conquer everything he sees. But again, his personality is not one I'm a fan of. But as a player, I think, as a Barcelona fan, it's going to be a lot easier to appreciate him now.
I think that ambition and that desire to keep challenging himself on new frontiers is a lot like LeBron James. And what we saw LeBron do this summer was go to Los Angeles to join a Lakers team that I don't really know what they're doing, but, you know, good try, Lakers. It's very ambitious, for sure. As long as Juve have a plan in place to pay for him, and then it'll be fine. But, yeah, even then, it will be a different... I can watch him with a little different mentality now that I'm not, you know, watching a Madrid derby and, you know, just fearing that he's going to, you know, do what he did, you know, at the Calderon, the last derby at the Calderon, score a hat trick. He could just do that at any time. He still can. It's going
to
be
different. You know, when I was done with him, that I knew I was going to stop trying to like him because I didn't think he was going to leave Madrid. So I thought, okay, he's going to play the rest of his career in Madrid, and there's just no way I'll like him. You know when that happened? When he imitated Messi's celebration when they scored at Camp Nou.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, when Messi did that celebration, showing his shirt to the crowd, he had just won El Clásico to basically win Barcelona Liga. Ronaldo scored a goal to equalize a Super Cup first leg. Like, the difference in importance between those two goals is immense. And yet, Ronaldo managed to Ronaldo tried to make those two things equal.
Oh, it was so petty.
And people bought it. Because of course people buy it.
It was so petty.
This is more impactful when it's Ronaldo showing his six-pack.
Yeah, Messi doesn't have one of those.
Yeah, no, Messi's a little fat, actually.
No, that's a bad thing. Everyone's body type is different. No,
I'm fat, I'm happy. This took a weird turn. Let's go back to football.
Anything else on Cristiano? Did you see the Marca cover? Just of all his goals against every team he played?
Oh, I saw that. That was cool.
Oh, it was actually a really cool cover. I'm not going to say it made me feel a twinge of emotion, but it was a cool cover to see. You know, there goes Cristiano, the legend of the 450 goals. I know Marca think it's 451, but it's 450. It was a really cool
camp.
Yeah, because Pepe got the one that they keep giving to Cristiano. But yeah, there he goes. He's gone. La Liga is going to be totally different now, and I think Madrid are going to spend a lot of money. I think there could be a lot more movement from that squad this summer as Lopetegui just reshapes it. And Madrid are going to spend a lot of money. That's the translation, is that they will spend a lot of money. I still think there is a chance they bring in Neymar. I think it will probably take to the end of the summer.
I hope they do.
Yeah. I bet.
I'm telling you, for me, it's going to be a lot more fun to win El Clasico against Neymar than Ronaldo. A lot more fun.
A little bit of schadenfreude there. But I respect it. I respect the pettiness.
I don't care, man. Petty words all day.
We talked about Atletico's window a bit earlier in the program, but Barca's window, you liked it so far. Arthur's come in. Clement Lenglet was announced today. There's interest in signing Willian from Chelsea.
God, well. No.
So how would you feel about Willian and Barca?
I like it to this point, but when there's a Willian rumor, I don't like it anymore. But like... Okay, I don't do this very often, but you're a friend of mine, so I'm going to do it. It's Arthur, not Arthur.
Arthur.
It's Arthur.
Noted.
Yes, because he's Brazilian, so I know the pronunciation of his name. Because I don't do this with, like, I don't try to teach you how to say Griezmann, because I don't know how to pronounce his damn name. So
Arthur, got it.
But it's actually Arthur.
Arthur.
Yes, but that's it. That's all, the only thing I want to say on that. Like, here's the thing. I was thinking about this because I thought we were going to talk about it. So I was really thinking about it. Like, if you look at our starting 11, we have one of the... I think I can easily say we have one of the top five starting 11s in football. Like, if you look at Ter Stegen, and then the back four of Sergio Roberto, Piqué, Umtiti, and Jordi Alba. Midfield of Busquets, Rakitic, and Coutinho. And the front three of Dembele, Messi, and Suarez. That's up there with anyone. Our biggest problem since we won the Champions League and what we've been trying to do in every transfer window and failed is to get a bench. Because we haven't had any meaningful contribution from a bench since the Champions League win in 2015 when we had Pedro and Xavi. Those two alone were huge reasons why we won the treble that season. And since those two guys left, we struggled a lot to find any depth in the bench.
I think that's still kind of the problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The reason why we haven't won the Champions League is because we have no bench. So every transfer window would try to solve that problem. And I think we're on a good path. If we don't sign Willian and we sign Eriksen, I think we have kind of the perfect transfer window because we're addressing a serious problem for last season, and that's a third center back, which to me is solved with Lenglet because he's fantastic.
He's good, yeah. He was really good last year on a Sevilla team that was very inconsistent. He was quite good.
Yes. I think we saw the departure of Paulinho already helps to solve the midfield problems.
God, what a crazy deal. Goes back to China, basically using Barca for a pay raise.
Yeah, I think we need a podcast just about that transfer, honestly. But anyway.
So janky.
The departure of Paulinho itself will help the midfield problems because it was a lot of the midfield problems last season. And then you have Arthur. And then you have Carlos Alenia, who I have so many high hopes for, or such high hopes for. He's really good. And I think out of Alenia and Arturo, who are two, yes, young and experienced guys, but so talented, with so much potential, you can get a really, if you combine those two, you get a really good third midfielder to back up Busquets and Rakitic. Rakitic, by the way, is, to me, the World Cup he's having. Everybody talks about Modric, but the World Cup Rakitic is having is just absurd.
Yeah, he's had a great tournament.
He won two penalty shootouts, and the hero was Modric.
You know, the nerve it takes to not just win one, but win two in the knockouts of the World Cup, the nerve, the mentality you have to have.
With the final penalty.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
And yet the hero is Modric, but I digress. And if you assign Eriksen, you gain more depth up front, because then Dembele can be on the bench in some games. Coutinho can be on the bench in some games. You can change formation to, let's say, a 4-2-3-1, and then Suarez is on the bench while Messi is the lone striker, or vice versa. So if we can nail those three or four signings, we can really seriously have depth, and I think then we can challenge for things. The things are Europe, because like I said, Champions League is wide open. La Liga is ours. I think Real Madrid will struggle a lot. It's going to be Barcelona and Atleti for La Liga this season. And I still think we have a little more because we have Messi, and at the end of the day, that's a huge difference. But for the Champions League, you need depth, because that's how we won the treble in 2015. Luis Enrique had Xavi, Pedro, and Suarez and Rakitic just arrived. Both had great seasons. And then you have Xavi and Pedro, and Luis Enrique did a masterful job of rotating the squad throughout the season. And then when we arrived to the semifinal of the Champions League, we were the most fit team in Europe because our main players rested so much.
He rotated the whole damn year.
Yeah, and we still won La Liga with ease.
Yeah.
At Calderon, by the way,
as a revenge for
2014. And then we won the Champions League, destroying Bayern in the semifinal and walking over Juventus in the final.
I remember watching the first leg against Bayern and just thinking to myself, they are still so fresh. It's a matter of time before they put up two or three, and lo and behold, they put up three. I just thought,
Messi scored that ridiculous goal.
Boateng hasn't recovered from that, by the way.
Yeah, and it's, and by the way, another part of that goal, he chipped Neuer.
Yeah, he did.
When Neuer was actually Neuer, not the Neuer we saw in the World Cup, by the way.
Ter Stegen should have started, not Neuer.
That's a joke that only Barca fans will get, but Ter Stegen would have won the World Cup. That's an inside joke that only the Barca fans listening to this podcast will understand. But anyway, so we need that depth, because then we can rotate throughout the season. I think we should throw everything we can get, all of our bad assets, to use an NBA term, out of our bad assets that we have, plus a lot of money, throw at Tottenham, see if they give us Eriksen, and then I think we're set for the season. And if we can get Rabiot, which is a big rumor right now, then I think we're set for the decade. If we get Rabiot and Eriksen, good lord.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what do you think of possibly signing Rabiot?
That seems like a thing. Apparently, Eric Abidal has traveled to Paris to talk to Rabiot. He's just not happy there, even though he's one of their best players, but he's just not happy, because who is happy in a team with Neymar? That's a question I ask you. He's not happy there. PSG are talking about signing some midfielders, maybe. I heard a Pogba rumor, but I don't know if I buy it. But anyway, maybe Rabiot just wants to go somewhere else. Maybe a more competitive league, and even though La Liga is the most competitive, but still. More competitive than France, obviously, and he can play for Barca. Man, I'll tell you, a midfield of Busquets, Rakitic, and Rabiot, I'm set. I don't even know. I literally can't even about a midfield of Busquets, Rakitic, and Rabiot. I'm telling you.
Will Andre Gomez still be a Barcelona player on September 1st?
If we get Eriksen, no, because Andre Gomez is definitely going to Spurs if we get Eriksen. Because I know for a fact Spurs like Andre Gomez, and Barca will put him in the deal if they get Eriksen. That's a thing that is happening. What I'm hearing, and I'm hearing from people that I trust, is 110 million plus Andre Gomez plus Rafinha. That's an insane package.
For Eriksen.
But we got nothing from Gomez and Rafinha for the last couple of years, so I like it.
Yeah, Gomez in particular. But yeah, I thought Inter were going to buy Rafinha. I thought they were going to take up his option to purchase.
No, I don't think that's happening.
Well, that definitely works in Barca's favor.
So they're spending that money on Nainggolan.
Yeah, that works in Barca's favor.
Exactly. When Nainggolan was signed, I was like, oh, Rafinha is staying in. Because they got Nainggolan. And they had a bunch of other midfielders on loan that they wanted to re-sign. I think Gagliardino, Vecino, I think Inter wanted to resign all those guys. So if they did, and they got Nainggolan, there's no way Rafinha's coming back. So if we can, I'm telling you, a package of 110 million, Rafinha and Gomez, is a great package for Spurs, and it's not that much of a loss for Barca. So I like it if it happens.
Especially if you get a guy of Eriksen's quality.
And if he can get Rabiot with Eriksen, good lord.
I don't want this to happen because I don't want too many nice things to happen to Barcelona. But, you know, if you're excited about it, then that's good. That makes one of us.
Think like this. If Barca get really good, really, really good, plus Ronaldo leaving, Real Madrid's not going to be that good next season.
I mean, that is good. I don't know if making Barca, you know, world beaters is the way to go about that. But hey, as long as, you know, we keep Madrid in the dumps, right?
You kept Griezmann. That's enough already for you.
No, it's not. Atletico is still spending out here.
Sure, but think about it. You get Lamar, Joseph Martins, and whoever else you get. Griezmann's not there. What's the point?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's... When I said that's enough, I said that's enough to make you happy.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
But that's enough signings.
No, it's not.
Good lord, you want too much. You're gritty like Ronaldo.
Wow.
Too ambitious.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm trying to recover from watching Yannick Carrasco and Nico Gaitán for more than a year. I'm sorry.
Speaking of Carrasco, what an Atletico Madrid World Cup he had, huh? That was the Carrasco that Atletico Madrid know and hate.
Oh, yes. It's not a coincidence. You ask any Atletico supporter, really any one of them, not a coincidence that he comes off with Belgium trailing 2-0 to Japan and Belgium go on to win. And he doesn't really play like meaningful minutes again.
And they beat Brazil.
And they beat Brazil without him.
And they're the better team against France.
Yeah, for a chunk of that game, they were. Although I think France's performance is getting dinged unnecessarily. Not by you, but just in general. And Griezmann said it was a very Atletico Madrid performance. And yeah, I agree with them. Belgium had like 2/3 possession, like maybe one or two great chances for that entire game.
True.
Before we go, we have to talk about your playlist, obviously.
Oh, sure.
And what music you're bumping these days, Renato. So let's have it. What are you listening to?
Oh, let me look. Oh, just listened to a great album last week. Mike Shinoda, Post-Traumatic. Mike Shinoda obviously going solo, and he did it. His first album is fantastic. There's a lot of references to Chester Bennington, obviously from Linkin Park.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see that there's a point in the album, there's a song called Crossing a Line, and it's not from that point on, the album's not about Chester, it's just about Mike living his life, you know? So it's a great album where he talks about everything he felt over the last year, but then moving on and having his own life. It's a great album.
Mm.
Great album. I recommend it to anyone. Mike Shinoda, Post-Traumatic. It's fantastic.
Renato's and music recommendations.
And I've been listening to an odd podcast, too, so there's that.
Renato's music and podcast recommendations. An essential part of the pod. Anytime I have you on, it's an essential part of Baronato.
Okay. I like it.
It is.
I like it.
What else you got? Anything before we sign off?
Not really. I'm trying to play video games, but by now FIFA is just beat to the ground.
Yeah, I'm tired of playing FIFA.
At this point, you just wait for 19. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
The problem is 19 is like 3 months away, so that's the bad part.
What's your weather like right now?
It's cold as hell because it's winter.
Lucky you. Oh,
man, lucky it's so you. Good right now. I love the winter. It's like...
I'm so jealous.
I don't know what the equivalent is in Fahrenheit, but we're like 17 Celsius right now. 17 Celsius is just perfection.
Yeah, I'm at 32 Celsius, which is 90 Fahrenheit, and 52% humidity today.
I'm telling you, because of where I live, maybe it's the same for you in Arizona, I don't know. 32 Celsius is like 50. where I live. It's like, I don't know, 110 Fahrenheit or something.
Oh, we had 110 last week here. Yeah, this is actually nice for me. This is actually nice.
Whenever it goes over 90 Fahrenheit here, it's just the worst. Man. So right now, winter for the next 2 or 3 months is going to be great.
God, you're so lucky.
I always look forward to July because there's no football season. Of course, there is now with the World Cup, but it's not the same. So you get to rest a little bit and be in the cold. So you basically got laid down under cover all day. It's great.
Yeah, Atletico's preseason training started yesterday.
Day two. Already?
Yeah, day two today.
Well,
10 first,
who is there?
10 first-team players, pretty much everyone who didn't go to the World Cup. And the rest are just
not like, Gabby, though. Games. Oh, we gotta talk about Gabby.
Yeah,
come on.
We do. We didn't talk about Gabby at all. Yeah, I've talked
you
about
know,
it on the last couple podcasts.
You know how much I love Gabby.
Oh, yeah.
So I was really sad for you and for Atleti fans. That's a guy that served a club well.
Yeah, he did.
And was kind of the same time as the Iniesta departure, so it's kind of, honestly, it was very tough for me. Like, these two legendary La Liga midfielders, and they're obviously they're completely different ways, but two guys that are so important for their clubs, and Gabby, who was there literally through the worst of times, and he enjoyed the best of times, two Champions League finals, Europa League win, La Liga title. So I'm really happy for him, and I'm glad he's gonna make some money now because he deserves it.
And Torres is gone too.
Not that he wasn't making it at Atleti, but right. Like he can play. He doesn't need to play like in the most competitive environment. He can make a truckload of money, so it's great for him.
And Torres is gone now too.
Yeah, I don't really like Torres, so I don't really care about him.
He did score a lot of goals against Barca. That's true.
He tormented Barca in the first part of his career. And when he was at Chelsea.
Yeah.
He did that in 2012?
2012. Yeah, 2012. And then when he came back to Atletico, he scored a few goals against y'all.
Yeah, but he was old. I didn't really care then.
But yeah, he's gone. He's gone to the Japanese league to join Andres Iniesta.
You know what's the biggest memory I have of Torres in the second time at Atleti, and that's a bad one? When he got a concussion in that game.
Against Depor. Yeah.
Gabby was crying when he saw it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was incredibly scary.
That's what I remember most about his like second time. Because it didn't do much, honestly. In terms of, you know, scoring and playing well. He scored some goals, but it wasn't great. But that one was brutal, man. I saw that play. I was watching that game live. It was tough to watch.
Like, there was legit concern that dude was like, not only going to miss the rest of the season, but, like, dude was, like, on, like, life support. There was
But, of course, it's a Atleti player who was back in 2 weeks.
He was back in, literally, in 2 weeks. He was
it's
back.
Insane. It's insane. Even the old ones suffer freaking gosh darn concussions, and they're back in 2 weeks. The 52-year-olds. I'm telling you, there's something in the water of Wanda, man. I'm telling you.
And on that note, I believe this brings to an end the latest edition of Baronato. Renato Gonzalez, my guest, thank you as ever. This was great fun.
Thank you.
We will do it again soon. You can follow Renato on Twitter at RenatoDSG. You can follow me on Twitter at JBBaron. Follow Barca Blaugranas at Blaugranas Barca. You can follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. And like ITC on Facebook at Facebook.com/Into the Calderon. Subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of Colchonero Chat on your favorite podcasting platform. That includes Apple Podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps to get us more eyes and ears, gets us more listens. In addition, head over to patreon.com/ColchNeroChat to become a Colchonero Chat amigo. From as little as $3 a month, you can access the weekly bonus pods. Did one with Rob Walker earlier this week on the state of Atletico's finances. Bit of a deep dive, so go check it out if you haven't. patreon.com/ColchNeroChat. Become a Colchonero Chat amigo today. We'll be back next week. Until then, adios.